Chairperson, that's a question. Yeah, whether we deal with the HR issues or we finish program one, and then we allow General Gates to deal with his areas, then we can come and move to program two. I'm seeking guidance. Okay. Thank you, Chair. In that regard, I just want to say that a few slides are there. I would like to point and navigate the committee to. General Skete will be dealing with slides 51 to 54 in terms of performance management. He will then move on to slide 58, slide 72, slide 87, slide 96, and slide 104. So do not mind the jumping as he jumps. Those are all the slides that he's got to deal with in terms of programs that are teaching in program one. So he'll start with slide 51 to 54. He will then move on to slide 58, jump to 72, jump to 87, 96, and 104. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just from our side as well, from the physical side, we would just like to indicate then also our performance indicators in this regard. It should also be remembered that from a financial viewpoint, obviously our biggest performance indicator are the financial statement, 42 pages of those each and every year. So that's actually also the statement of financial position and performance overall. But in terms of your activity indicators, let's look at the first one. Improvement of requisite resources to sustain quality service delivery on strategic priorities. The first thing is, and which is again one to align, one of the main tools in the SAP is our vehicles. This is the well-known ratio that we are referring to, and we say the ratio of personnel to vehicles, and we say maintain the ratio of 4.51 members to one vehicle in this regard. And this is the ratio that I've referred to previously. If we have huge debt in purchasing this year, this ratio will increase. So this is actually the thing that we must see to it, that we at least maintain it or go even below it. Then also the percentage of firearms and bullet-resistant vests distributed, and we say our target there is 100% bullet-resistant vests planned for procured and distributed, and the same as firearms. The reason is strategic sourcing, to procure it quickly and also get it to a user quickly. So it doesn't only be in the store, but you issue it in subsequent years and so forth. Obviously you carry buffer stock and so forth, but the fact of the matter is to get it as quickly as possible in the user's hands. Then the third one, percentage of official SAPS firearms stock being marked. This is an important control mechanism, and it has a lot of benefits, as we all know, from attempted murders, but also in terms of our loss containment strategy. If it's marked with a bully star and it has those dots on it, you get the products that are just stripes in Woolworth or in Pick and Pay, it's very important. We say our aim there is 100%. I don't know whether I should say tongue in the cheek, all 100% that I see are very challenging targets indeed. But be that as it may, this is what the case might be. Then also, if we go to the infrastructure development, a very important environment also for portfolio committee, for communities out there, for police and others. Infrastructure development and public access to police services. Percentage of planned police facility projects completed as per the SAPS infrastructure development plan, and that includes capital works, leases, and maintenance. And what do we say? We say at least 80% of them must be achieved. This is an immovable environment which is very, very difficult sometimes, and where we have our big friends, the Department of PTW, as a third party. Then also percentage variation from approved infrastructure budget. That is a new performance indicator, and we say this is a typical monetary indicator, and we say not more than 20%. But this 20% has actually also a rider to it, which doesn't stand there. There's normally a minimum earmarked amount which you must exceed. So, to a large extent, it is already demarcated. If we then go to 53, and one will then immediately see enhancing information systems and information and communication technology, the so-called ICT environment, to support the business objectives of the SAPs. Members will immediately see there's a lot that's been written there, but the one is about infrastructure, the one is about solutions, and the one is about governance. Now let's read them. Percentage of identified information, communication, technology, infrastructure sites, modernized, implemented, and maintained. The second one is percentage of prioritized information systems, solutions, developed, implemented, and maintained. So the one is infrastructure sites, the one is the solutions or the systems, and then the other one, percentage of IS, ICT, governance approved, implemented, and improved, and then percentage of the allocated budget spent on approved IS, ICT. If you look at the targets from top to bottom, on the infrastructure element, 95%, on the solutions or the system element, 70%, on the ICT governance aspect, 60%, and then on the percentage allocated budget, 98%. If we then go to the last one that we've also included, it's also in the 14-15, it was in the 14-15 ADD for the first time, and it will also be repeated in the 15-16, we say, for a financial management capability, percentage of legitimate invoices paid within 30 days. This is a new performance indicator, but for 14-15 it's 97%. I could already say the actual was 97.8, but this is for legislative oversight a bit later. Then we move up to 98, 99, and 99%. We've got approximately 4,500 users out there who are all processing. In essence, this includes your big priority environments, your IT, your infrastructure, your critical items, and then your payment within 30 days. From my side, this is it. I would just then like members to page to page 58.
Before we go to the financials, because 58 is the financials for program 1, we still have an indicator in this program, program 1, indicator 55, which has bearing to our inspectory, and I'd like General Stubbe to address that. As soon as he finishes, for each of the sessions, we then have a slide that deals with the financials for those targets. Then I will allow General Schiff to work us initials for program 1. General Stubbe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, National Commission. Chair, this indicator under compliance speaks to the number of inspections conducted by the inspectorate. The target for 15-16 is 790 police stations. That is inspection size, and 500 of the 700 is police stations. Thank you.
On that note, Chair, I then wish to point the committee to slide 58, which now gives us the consolidated financial allocation proposed for this program, and I shall ask General Skitter to walk us through that on slide 58.
Thank you, Chair. These are now the sub-programs of Program 1 administration. So the program that we dealt with earlier are now being subdivided into the sub-programs in those blocks, and below those blocks you will even find the elements below the sub-programs that also consist of the elements. Firstly, you will see there are four sub-programs: Ministry, management, corporate services, and then also civilian secretaries. The purpose here is develop departmental policy and manage the department, including providing administrative support. The first aspect we would like to indicate, members of this committee have come a long way with the designated department of the secretariat. Now, 14-15 was their first year, where they became a designated department in an independent manner. Now, the civilian secretary, for putting it as a designated department, is reflected as a transfer payment on the vote police, and we have and will be transferring 105.1 million to the secretariat for 15-16 financial year, where they will then run also again run their own administration. And it is also foreseen that they will become more and more and more independent, doing their own thing in this regard. Then also, by the way, this is a matter that we cannot touch as police. That would be immediately unauthorized. So it is a transfer payment, which the Treasury gave to the police, and we will then be giving it to the secretariat based on the cash flow model that they will provide to us. Then, corporate services consist inter alia of human resource development, shall I say training, but that is the old term, of 1.944 billion. Technology management services, 2.821 billion. Supply chain, which includes CETA payments. Supply chain management, 3.771 billion, of which 998.7 million is for capital works. Human resource management of 1.498 billion. Financial services, 872 million. And corporate support, 1.018 billion. Significant funding levels, especially for the CJS revamp initiative, 803 million for the IT portion vesting under program 3 detective services, IJS projects 345.9 million and hosting network infrastructure upgrades within the TMS environment. This in essence then is a subdivision of the program 1, and as you cascade lower, subprograms and elements. May I just say that in this environment you will find the payment of all our systems, our IT systems, software, hardware and so forth. You will find our store environment for clothing, for ammunition, for pyrotechnics, for weapons, for communication, for stationery and so forth. And also our training institutions you will find here. So it's a big program in the sense that it has to support your four programs, your operational programs. I think the text below the columns will give an indication of the volumes that's applicable in this environment. Thank you, Deputy Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Next we will go to questions. National Commissioner, the first question will be from my side in terms of Program 1 management and leadership. I want to maybe give a specific question. We had this morning the question of the Commission in the West Bank. It is the public about the management of the Commission. We have people speak that people in acquisition. Now, I want to put public people in the perspective of the stability that we invite. And we know some environment, you appoint the government officer, of course, people who come there, you take people there. But in terms of your top 200, your lieutenant generals, which is not getting, ensuring that they are the best of the best, and getting the partners of running the fund. What measures would you can be indicated to the committee going forward that would deal for one and for all with some of these perceptions in that is in the public domain? I think on the third committee we need. We must also see your part from the public, but also to your main, the 200,000 members, the 200,000 members, that our leadership can be trusted. We've got confidence in it, and we do a leadership. I think in the last year you indicated that progress you've made in trying to get a sense with cleaning that environment, you know, dealing with the difficult issues. And I think what we need from the portfolio committee is an assurance that from the strategic or leadership perspective, you're going to deal with that safely, effectively, and immediately. Because I think that will also contribute where people will know exactly if they not subscribe to the university culture, that what we envision in the industry, that what we need, that there will be consequences and that we see leadership from the front. Because I think that's very, very important. To implement this budget, we need that strategic approach. And I would really, from the committee side, get assurance from you. From your perspective, what are we going to do from the business point of view to ensure that we stabilize the environment? That's the first question from my side. I'll move on to that.
Thank you, Professor. What is the number of operational members components in K53? Next one is, what is the type of relationship that is offered for such? My next one is, in your fingerprint, in your firearm proficiency, you only talk of handguns. What about the rest of the firearm? My last one. The 379 police stations, how will they be selected? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, please explain the exclusion of the target or the percentage of allocated funds spent on the whole project facility. Of allocated funds of the whole project facility. Number two, in slide 36, can you please elaborate on the internship undertaken by SAS? Question number three, in slide 51, welcome the reinstatement of the performance indicator for the team match firearms. Number four, in slide 46, please elaborate on the charge of courses for which bursaries are offered and on what salary level most of these are awarded. Number five, in slide 49, what is the impact of the inclusion of the target to measure the average acceptable rate of unaging assets, which is sick and incapacitated? Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Zenon, for the presentation. I must say that in breaking down and sort of the narrative explaining the task, I can see that a lot of work has gone into that, and there's a lot of clarity that is provided in breaking that down. I think we must compliment you for that. Compared to what sometimes these in other departments in terms of the target and measure of these issues. So the question I want to ask in general terms, there's always a percentage shy of 100%. Now I'm just trying to find out, you're working a provision into that you're not going to reach. You don't want to reach 100%. You want to be shy of 100%, get to 95%, 5%. I don't know that 5% you're working in terms of what is it that you worry about, but you're not getting to that. So that's a kind of a general question I'm asking. In all the target that you set, even if it's 70%, then you say that if you the baseline is that you say just shy of getting 100%. Is the information, is that informed by the factors that we don't really get 100%? Knowing that you're not yet making a team order, but I'm just worried that you plan to be shy of 100% performance. Then the next question I want to know, when you say 100%, and I'm able to see 100% each on the sample on the vessel result in the issue. But what I was struggling to read is from what? Is it true? And so 200% of what you decide you're going to be, what is the plan? What are you planning to do so that you can measure on the basis of what is planned for this? That's an aspect. Then, the 80%, 80% on 100%, if you go to page 52, you'll see the question I'm asking in terms of the shy. Let me just raise this question because we're talking about the program, that we will get to it. But I do want to put it on the table right at the beginning. And give you time to think through it. I have raised early on in terms of the pie chart, the issue about the breaking down and retention aspect. And I think General Skeeter correctly suggested that we go to 87. And 87 is the top program. My actual worry about it, it is a sub-program of that particular piece of work we like in terms of that legislation. Now, I was trying to think hard. What stopped the management in creating eight programs? Program six is a program on its own that deals with DCI as a kind of influence. Why subject me to the sub-program? I still haven't been canvassed enough to accept and understand that. Given the what we still have to deal with in the time to come of the sufficiency issue that causes rain, I'm just worried that even our planning, we are not planning to make sure that we say this is what we are dealing with, it's a program on its own. Now, I envision the chair right at front, because we're dealing with a program, to offer the management also time to think through this. Because if we are going to deal with it later in the amendment of legislation given the Constitutional Court, you would have been further down with your budget process. The appropriation then would have been approved in the House. You would not be able to amend compliance unless you do it later in the appropriations in the kind of October. So I'm just asking, the thing behind the management will make it a sub-program, given these challenges that we all have and what's already been expressed by the Constitutional Court. So I thought, Chair, to make that statement much clearer so that I'm not trying to catch up in a small business of questions, just to make the complete statement that this is what I think we should be affecting in our plan, because we are coming to government work as we think. So I think a fully dressed program on that would be better in terms of going forward with business. Yeah. Thanks, sir.
On the market. Thank you, Chairperson. Two questions for clarity. On page 49. Performance indicator, average acceptable rate of unscheduled absence. I was just thinking to myself, we need to have such a performance indicator, because I don't see how you can control that. Especially if you put it at a percentage, sort of, in terms of percentage.
Can you actually say that you don't want people to get sick and you put it in a percentage? I foresee a situation where it's going to cause problems. Because it means if a person says, I'm sick, you'll have to check whether he or she is really sick. especially if you put it at a percentage. According to me, well, that's my personal view. I don't think you need such a performance indicator, especially because it might cause problems if you put it in terms of percentages. Well, that's my feeling. I don't know how that can be worked out. And on slide 52, a percentage variation from approved infrastructure projects, 20% variance. Isn't that too high? Or what causes it to, why not 3%? What makes it be that very high? Are there some of the things that need variation from time to time, or how do you come to the 20%? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Mbele. Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I'll just revive that question that I asked earlier about how the budget speaks to strengthening accountability mechanisms and disciplinary processes. And maybe just to assist a little bit, an example, I don't know if it's true or not, but an example that I thought of would be something along the lines of, if you can explain how the allocation to overtime payments would speak to those disciplinary mechanisms, because you know if you don't have enough resource provision for relevant officials to work overtime in presiding over or taking part in those processes, then the kind of targets you have on slide 47, where it says 80% of cases finalized within 90 days, becomes more difficult because you actually don't have the human resource provisioning to drive and to sustain that kind of work. So that's the kind of detail and clarity I'm looking for when I ask how the budget speaks to strengthening accountability and pushing and speeding up those mechanisms and processes. My second question, still on slide 47, is I'm concerned to see that the targets for incidences of corruption being investigated are standing only at 95%. That should surely be 100%. Corruption by service members is too serious to for at least the intention of striving to investigate them to be anything less than 100%. I was always constrained on how they play into it. In reality, is a different story. But as a symbolic, expression, surely the SAPs should say we will investigate 100% of reported incidences of corruption by members. I don't see how there could be any kind of compromise with that. And I would ask that target actually become 100%. It's not enough. It's not a strong enough message for police to say, we'll let a couple of reported corruption incidences slide. All of them have to be looked into. And then my third question from slide 50. I would just like for the staff to please unpack and elaborate on what this demographic analysis that's going to be done entails. And also what it specifically aims to achieve. And the reason I ask that is I can't think what kind of information about the personnel complements demographic profile of police stations is currently not captured by the current record keeping systems. If one was to ask what's the female breakdown, what's the racial breakdown, what's the all kinds of demographic information that you would look for in a police station, I imagine that's captured by the current record keeping system. So what specifically is this analysis aiming to capture, and to what end? What's this analysis going to feed into? Just to understand that, because it's not clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The
there was a statement that obviously the SAPS wants to decrease civil claims, but I'd like to know how they intend going about that to prevent SAPS members from raping, shooting, murdering, beating, running over civilians, the things that we see reported by the IFAD. Now, I believe it's sort of a strict and swift disciplinary process. We've seen discipline drag out over years and years. They should be thrown out, arrested, and tried. But we're not seeing that. There are, of course, still the untouchable, it seems to me, 1,448 convicted criminals in the SAS. It's gone very quiet. We've heard no more of that. Of course, they should be thrown out. They're murderers and rapists and bigamers and arsonists. And they work and they'll be promoted in the SAS. So some information on that, please. I'd like to know what moves have been budgeted for in terms of implementing the NDP tenets in terms of demilitarization, ridding ourselves of the odious apartheid of a rank, etc. And what has been budgeted for in terms of reestablishing the very specialized units so disastrously broken up by Jackie Salebi. What has happened to the targets for policing of rural communities? Why isn't the money allocated to the DPCI ring-fenced, as it should be in terms of the law? What information is there of the anti-corruption working group that was announced with great fanfare? I haven't personally heard anything more about it since. And please fill us in on the recruitment rolls when the high-ranking police officers were arrested last year. What is the situation? What's been done to tighten that up from the administrative side? And finally, yeah, just an aside, I'm very concerned and I need some input here, I think, from the National Police Commissioner to read reports right now that contingent of Zimbabwean police have been dispatched into South Africa to protect Zimbabwean citizens here. I'm most concerned about this for a sovereign nation, and I think this is the time to ask the Police Commissioner for her input on that matter. Thank you.
Honourable Martin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a follow-up on the question that was asked by Honourable Mbera on slide 50. The number of police stations demographically analyzed to inform resource allocation. It definitely doesn't make any sense to me. If it was geographical, it would make sense to me. If it's demographically, I don't know how that gets into resource allocation processes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Maybe just two technical issues in terms of the IPP that the committee will suggest as recommendations maybe for next year, just maybe to improve. During hearings that we had from the budget of the parliament, there's a new unit looking at all the APPs. I've indicated, and I think the targets, that apart from the percentages, numbers or figures must also be used. I think in your APP you use sometimes the percentages and sometimes the figures. So the percentages must be accompanied by the numerical numbers. So that is really a suggestion from our side. And then also the question of technical specifications of the performance indicator. For instance, in other cluster departments, you've got it at the back, the technical indicators, the definitions, like that IPED. So we don't have it here. So we'll just maybe, as a recommendation in our report, just maybe if the police next year also just can include that. That will just assist. Thank you very much. Over to the National Commissioner and the team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me try and guide the team to navigate through the answers that the questions that have been posed. I'll start with your questions, Chairperson, and I'm hoping that my team, if they have anything to add, they can add the issue around management and leadership, the issues you have pointed to, the allegations, the stability, and all other aspects. I start off by confirming to the honourable members that indeed the issue of leadership being a very important driver for success and achievement and positive delivery
is seriously embraced by us as the police service. I have said when I made the presentation on the strategy that says, like to put it on record for this gathering, that I personally as a leader see leadership as a game changer. If I have a team of leaders, A, that understand that which we're presenting here is what needs to be done, B, understanding that they as leaders have a very important role to play, A, to inspire the employees, secondly, to influence the employees, and thirdly, to ensure that we achieve the necessary impact as desired by this government. Those are very important attributes that I'm looking for from the team that I'm sitting around here and others that I shall be sitting around here. Also, Chairperson, would like to say as a leader, I also think we should place on our shoulders a very, very onerous burden of saying, if we are to police and we are to police South Africa successfully, it is important that we put the fourth eye in perspective, which is integrity. It is important for us to ensure that we work hard at ensuring that we lead through integrity. So the issues that you are raising around the team and related aspects, we do need team health policing. It is a non-negotiable element. We must all work hard at ensuring that we achieve that. What have we done, Chairperson, to deal with these issues that you've raised? I shall start off by saying we have presented to the committee issues relating to our vetting turnaround strategy. All SMS members have submitted their applications for vetting to SSA because we did not want to self-vet, to go to our own crime intelligence and get our officials to vet. I can confidently say all of us have submitted. I have been receiving certificates from SSA. At this point in time, I have not received any denial of any of the applications. So I am comfortable that the clearances that we are receiving are positive. There are a few outstanding. I will be receiving those and I will be given a complete report in terms of the SMS. We have then, Chairperson, moved on to start saying we now need to focus on the entire SMS, the 740 plus members. So, I was talking about the Lieutenant Generals and this, yeah. So, those have been prioritized in terms of our vetting processes. I see, as I've indicated 2 days ago, that we've also started identifying areas that are very critical, areas such as procurement, SCM, because it's one of the areas that remains very challenging. We've identified some of those areas to say we should prioritize those in terms of vetting. We'll also be willing to give the feedback report, in our quarterly report, on that specific aspect to show how we are progressing. Our interest here is to ensure that every other member in the organization is vetted and that we can now get into a mode where we're looking at expiry of the vetting and then we can keep it current and continuous. I also, in that area, Chairperson, wish to confirm that at an entry level, we have tightened the noose. We have introduced much more rigorous processes in terms of who we are attracting to the police. We follow the normal processes of screening, including our vetting, but we've added an additional program to that area. The grooming terms are about that because we want a very focused process of also assessing beyond the desktop assessment of vetting the members that are coming in, and we have engaged people were assisting us in that space, and we believe, having gone through it second time over, that we are really starting to see a better, you know, intake of people, and also the re-engineering of our the restructuring of our recruitment processes, where it is now community based. We're finding quite some good value in the community assisting us with the very, very initial levels of screening, because we go out, we talk to the community, we explain to them what type of people we are looking for, we explain to them who is fit to be a police, who's not fit to be a police, and you find that there's almost, at that level, a very initial process of self-assessment, and people do not even bother to continue to the information desks where they have to fill in forms. We go throughout the process and go back to the communities to say, here's a list of the people that have been identified for the area. Are these the people you want to be police? Those community boards and the publication of those lists on notice boards in those areas are assisting us, because that people, the community is also able to come back and say, who are grateful, who are happy. And we go back and introduce them to say, here are the people finally that you have said. We go there, we parade the people, we parade, and the community can see who in those areas are coming in for our training. So we're trying a number of variations to ensure that we systematically strengthen our muscle in terms of ensuring that we deal with integrity issues and leadership aspects in that regard. Chairperson, we've also gone further to establish an integrity unit within staff. We are well advanced. The OG processes have been finalized. The structure is ready. We have trained the first 20 ethics officers who are working with a number of ethics organizations and universities that are offering this to assist us to shape that space. And we're hoping that that environment will assist us to really push the agenda in this area. With that, Chairperson, we've established within the detectives a national investigation unit. One of its sub-functions, beyond just looking at other strategic cases, one of its sub-functions is to investigate corruption cases of members within the service. So that is a dedicated platform within our detectives unit, so that we separate the work that the integrity people are doing from detection, because detection, the specialization is lying there. So that unit is assisting us to investigate corruption cases within the organization. We've then gone further through our disciplinary process to ensure that we, as you've heard, the targets that have been, some of the targets that have been read by General Ndegela, where we say there's a transversal target by the state to say we should complete our disciplinary cases within confined timeframes. We've committed through the target to say we would like to conclude our disciplinary cases within the 60-90 days that is prescribed by the state, so we will work harder at that. And to do so, we have introduced trial units, because when you get Ria Peha to be a chairperson of a disciplinary unit aspect, because it's a line function issue, not
Chairperson, I was at a point where I was talking about the recapacitated disciplinary process through the establishment of trial units. And then I've said we're looking for special skills within the organization. We have them. We're just reorganizing the skills. People with labor relations knowledge, people with legal capacity. So we will be establishing one national trial unit. There will be 9 trial units established. And the idea also is just not to make it a trial unit for Western Cape. We will chop, change, save, meet, so that there is that objectivity and checks and balances that will go with it. So that's part of the process where we're looking at guiding that integrity, enhancing our leadership initiatives. We're also looking at establishing, you know, again, enhancing what we have reported here, the combined assurance, where we're saying, you know, we must cover the entire ground using the AG, using the internal audit, using the inspectorate, as well as using the management, the leadership, in terms of management walkabouts. In addition, what we're looking at to ensure that we reduce those repeat audits, what do we do with the findings? The new strategy that has been put before us by the revised approach from the inspectorate is to have an inspectorate board, and that board will look into implementation of findings by all these assurance structures, so that we ensure that what comes out of that combined assurance, we already do something about the AG findings. Now we're saying we need a rigorous approach in terms of looking at the internal audit findings, the inspectorate findings, the walkabout findings, the findings that we get from some of your visits and all those. So we would want that board to actually sit and monitor, track all those type of things. So there are a number of initiatives that we are dealing to deal with issues of leadership. Finally, let me say we're also focusing on ensuring that we get leadership change. They can't take it for granted that because we've been there forever, we remain current, we remain knowledgeable. So we are investing quite significantly and targeting leaders for training. We've shared some of the programs for the first time. We are getting even our own lieutenant generals going for executive development programs. The first group went to VETS this year. As I said, not only are they going to be participating in the program, they will have global exposure. We are having programs for training the cluster commanders, the station commanders. So we'll continue as we get some bit of resources to add a little bit more to that. It's a journey, Chairperson. I want to say we can't say we are there, but the commitment, the plan, and the focus on enhancing our leadership continues, Chairperson. I would also say we are taking it down because we've introduced, for instance, an induction program for kennels. So anyone who gets promoted to a kennel level, we bring them up for 3 weeks so that we can have a full session with them to say, you are not getting into management. What does it mean? What are we expecting of you? HRT is running that program. I have the opportunity also as a leader to go and give a lecture as well as to formally give them their ranks, because we believe that by doing that, you almost psychologically start saying, think differently. And leadership and engage to hear them out also. What else are they looking for? We'll continue with those. We want to extend it to also lift it up to start dealing with brigadiers also, even though they are already in management. So those are some of the things we are thinking of, Chairperson. We've also introduced, in partnership with UNISA, a program management training. It's a year-long program, but this one is dedicated to women leaders. because we recognize that yes, we are progressing, we are starting to appoint more women. 34% of our women are in leadership. Through this program, we had the first crop of those graduating last year. The second crop of those are on, and if I look at the quality of program that is coming out of that UNISA, we are doing it with a UNISA business school, not UNISA, the main campus. And we find it to be very good, and we have the counselor coming to us to graduate the students. It's a very good program, and I think it will also assist our women in their leadership roles within the policing. So, Chair, that is a response to the first question. Is there any issue to add? I think our members will do so. We then move to the first questions that have been raised by Nema Molesi. I will ask the General Bekela to look into first.
Thank you, National Commissioner. In terms of that, I think the first question that was asked was about the number of operational members that are in the K-3 driver training program. I just want to indicate that, firstly, it's a program that was earmarked specifically to capacitate the operational members and not necessarily the support members. We started, it was not a start, but last year we did put 1,500 members on the program, and it was also SITA funded, that program of those members, in addition to the, to the about odd that, that there are 500 odd that is trained, but it's your places as well as, as a Binone, a college. But then even, for this financial year, we have learned about 1,000 to be trained. Again, SACITA is still playing a role in terms of funding, that training, and there will be about 500 that still goes on training in Bishop Levis and Binoni. But all those people are operational members because we had identified, I think, previous years, the number of people that are not having, a driver's licenses. But the program is not going that fast, because we also, in many times, depend on the testing stations and their availability in terms of testing other members. So that's why it is moving at a slow pace. But it is only meant for, for those operational members. The second question was about the types of learnership implemented in the South African, a police service. Firstly, is to indicate that SARS does not develop, learnerships. SARS only, takes from the system that is responsible for the learnerships, and they implement the relevant ones according to the needs of the organization. We have implemented, for instance, the automotive motor repair, a learnership from N2F level 2 to N2F level 4. That has to do now with mechanics. That is a mechanic, a learnership. We have implemented the AATP, Accelerated Artisan Training, a program. As part of that. We have implemented the paralegal, learnership. We have implemented the public admin, we have implemented the ODETD. So we will be focusing at those learnerships that are talking specifically to the needs of the, of the organization. Like, if you look at our garages, for instance, in terms of their needs, they need mechanics, they need this. We have implemented also a learnership on autotronics, which deals with the electricity of the car. Within the car. So it depends at a particular point in time, according to the needs of the organization, what to implement. But these are the learnerships that we are implementing, the automotive, not repair, the paralegal. We are talking about trial units, for instance. In order for us to be able to capacitate them, we are going to be training them once more on the paralegal. When I'm saying once more, there are members that have been trained, but they are not necessarily sitting in the, or they will not sit in the trial units, but we will be implementing also a paralegal, a learnership. We will be implementing, also the autotonics in terms of that. Now, I'm not sure whether I've corrected all or...
No. Proficiency on other guns.
Oh, it was why the handgun only. I think...
No, I was just reminding her of the next person. Yeah.
Yes. Why only handguns and not the other firearms? I think if the honorable member will remember, we have been running a project that has been dealing with the proficiency in terms of the firearms or the firearm competency for operational members in the organization. At this point in time, we are beginning to say we're no longer running the project. So we are going to be looking at the competency in terms of starting from the basic gun that is used in the police, which is the handgun that goes with the basic principles. For instance, if you go to the report that we have been giving, we would indicate those that have completed all the firearms, and they are competent. Then we would come to say, this one has just completed the legal principles and completed, maybe the handgun. This one has not been competent or has not done the handgun, has done the R5, has done the other one. So it is just now a systematic way of taking them through in terms of competency. And the unit standard that is actually determining, even the training, does not specify the guns, but the police specified the guns and they said handgun, shotgun, as well as the R5. We are going to be looking at them because the others are used in specialized environments. But in basic training, mainly the focus is usually on the first one. So I think that it's not that we're not going to be looking at all the guns, but I think now it said we're going to be focusing at the first level, and then we are going to be taking the others. It is a new indicator that we have put in. It has not been there before.
Okay.
In that particular. You see, when you go even to our training administration system, you have the guns separated. You will have the handgun, you will have the shotgun, you will have the R5. Yes. You will be competent in terms of the legal principles and the handgun. Then you will be competent in terms of the R5. Then you will be competent in terms of the shotgun. It's not to say the legal principles, you don't repeat them. But it's only because during the training, you may find that the person does not necessarily become competent and is not even using the R5 in terms of his area of operation. But they will still go through that. So at the end, you can say they are competent. The person now, when he has completed the three firearms, then he becomes competent in the whole unit standard. But the terms of competency have been blocked into three: the handgun, the R5, as well as the shotgun.
Yes, thank you, President. Now, I just wanted to add to the logic to say, if we need a detective, we would like the detective to be competent in a handgun, because the detective there would be no need for a detective to use a shotgun. But then there also comes a deployment requirement. If we need more members
for public order. We will take from the members who come from basic training or who have already been deployed, whether it's at police station. But we are then going to say this member must go through the public order requirement test, which will include competency in the short term. Now, if this member does not go through the test for being at public order, then this member shall not be declared competent for a short term because we can't use that member. The same requirement if we want the members apply to go to task force, which are your specialized task force, NIU, and as well as your TRT. Those members, the competency is linked to the course, which is the prerequisite requirement. Then it can't be deployed at PRP. So that is the first basic logic that we're trying to follow. But also, as Madame Begela said, we also say think that if I train a member in the program, the detective for plus minus 3 to 4 years might not use the shotgun. And because the operational field of the detective does not require regular use of the shotgun, the detective will be declared competent until he runs out of the shotgun knowledge before he would even use it. But if also use it regular, it also comes to where is it cost effective for us to do it. I think I'm just stating that logic. Thank you, Chairman.
Chairperson, in terms of the numbers of the people that are competent in firearms, I think I was on record and I disputed the figure of 40,000 this way. But I'm requesting that I can send an updated firearm competency report. I mean, once more, because I said the 155,000 people that are under the Police Act, they are not all operational, members. Some of them are support and others are in the management category. And then if you decipher that, you will find that, you're left with about 129,000 to 130,000 in terms of the operational members that are actually, on the street. I think in the report, I did even indicate the way in which we have separated the operational from the support and from the management, because we used the service allowance, that people get. So if you get a service allowance, then you fall under the operational. Then based on that, I think the number, which I indicated was that it is not 40,000, because those people that are not competent, it's not that completely they have not been competent in anything. It's only that they have not yet done all the three firearms. They might have done the legal principles and the handgun, or the legal principles and the R5, or the legal principles and shotgun. But can I request, a chairperson, that I send an updated, a report, because I did submit, at some point, which is going to indicate exactly the number, of the people that we are talking about, which is far less than the 40,000 that we are talking about. I will send it.
Yeah, I just wanted to come on the question of the commander and how do we make sure that this member doesn't use the firearm that is not competent for. Yes. I wanted to start Chairperson by saying, firstly, we have got what we call basic policing principles. And through the direction also from the National Commissioner, we've called all police to a basic policing in that. But I want to first then explain the instructions from basic policy. Firstly, all members who are deployed, they must go on parade, and they get infected on parade. That is the first basic. And include that inspection on parade before they are deployed. It includes the inspection of the firearms. But it's everything, all the equipment that they are using, whether it's bulletproof vest, what they should be using. But two, Honorable Chair, I think if members must be deployed, whether in detective or whether they are at the police station, the first prerequisite for them is that all of them must be competent in the handgun. So all I'm trying to say is that at the police station, you will not find a person who is not competent in handling a handgun. Then we have instances where we got the Section 102 of the Firearms Control Act, that is the declaration of members unfit. If the member has been declared unfit and is placed at a police station in the operational wing, that member is immediately removed. Because that member is not competent to render that service. He can't go out and attend a complaint where there's crime involved. So you will not find such members in that. Then what we're also working on now with HR is when a member is transferred from the one station to the other station, that is part and parcel of the transfer what we want to build in the CPN, is for other station or other unit to know this member is not competent in firearm A, B, C, and D. Or this member is competent, has been withdrawn because of Section 102 or 103 or whatever. But they get inspected on parade and they get taught in the lecture. That is basic policing. Even every command in the service is obliged to do that. Thank you. And we're monitoring it.
Thank you.
And the other one dealt with was a question about from Honorable Mulibati. It was around those 379 stations, how they are selected. In the same principle, it's a rolling criteria. What we are saying there is that what are we looking for when we talk about those that page 50 where we are saying we need to look at the profiles of those stations. Yes, there is that essay that gives us the statistic in terms of people. But we also know that development in those communities and informal settlements developed. We want to know, are there new informal settlements developing? How are they impacting on the station? Honorable Mari, you are right, we'll also look at geography. To start saying in terms of this changes for geography, moving from magisterial to municipal area, is an impact on that particular station. But there are many other things that we're looking into. We're saying the province that are sitting in those sectors, talk to us. How many churches are sitting there? How many are in terms, how many are in structured churches? So that's why we're using a concept demographics very, very broadly. The mosques that are developing in that area, they will have a completely different impact on that station. And they are not sitting in the demographics of SSA. We would want to understand what else is sitting there. Schools, which ones are closed, which ones are still active, but new schools emerging there. So we are asking our OD department to take 379 stations on a three-year rolling criteria. And when they finish the 1138 stations, they must then revert back to the initial ones to say, since you did your demographic assessment of that area, are there new issues, are there things that have changed that must inform how we are planning? And that's how we're doing it, to say, do 379, the next 379, the next 11, until we go to 1138, then go back and check for us. So it will be a continuous cycle for us to look at how that is happening to those stations. That we can look into, Chairperson, if it is to look at areas that have been seriously advantaged in the past, we can build into that priority, into that criteria, those type of, needs. So we've also factored in the process, in addition to the recommendations that we're getting, is to look at the classification of the stations, the Brigadier, the Colonel, the Captain stations, because it also informs the needs in terms of how we structure that 379. And we'll take the contributions that we've received from the committee also into account. Okay, thank you, Chair. And I think we're now going to the questions that have been raised by Honorable Mola, and General Becker shall continue. And I think General Skete, you are there also, allocated funds, the internships, the dot pin marking, the courses that batteries and courses targeted, the unscheduled management of cities. Okay.
Chairperson, I think the question was on the internships undertaken by the South African Police Service. I think I will just mention two, although we have a variety that we take. Here we are taking I don't know how to call them students, I want to call them the youth that have completed certain qualifications and they are unemployed, to give them experiential training in order for them to know the world of work as it is required by government. And I think, right now, we are having 65 interns that have started on the 1st of April that are in the internal audit environment. in order to capacitate that, I mean, that environment to be able to do what they are supposed to do. But we also have about 51 interns that have been taken into the, I mean, automotive environment, which is, I mean, the garages, I mean, the mechanics. So what I'm, what I'm saying therefore is that it's a program that is ongoing in the organization because it is legislated. It is sitting in the Skills Development Act. It is sitting in the Asia strategy of the DPSA in order for us to be able to comply. However, what we do when we are taking them, we either go on an advert or we go to the database of the unemployed, I mean, in the CTAS, in NYDA, in the Department of Labor, to exercise. And we subject them to a screening process in order for us to make sure that we are not bringing people, I mean, that are going to give us trouble when they are in the organization. So it's an ongoing, process. They get that experiential, training. They have the ability to apply, for the vacancies that are in the department. They apply also outside in the department. But again, the government, the measure that they have made is to ensure that when we take them, we put them on the PERSA system so that if an intern has done internship in the South African Police Service, cannot go the following year or the other year to the Department of Health and still require, to do an internship program. So that's just a control mechanism that has been put in place. But, it is taking place in the organization. Now, the type of courses where, bursaries are awarded, we have indicated that we have got policing qualifications that people undertake in the organization, like the National Diploma Policing, like the Bachelor Policing Practice, like the BA, Police Science, that they will take even at UNISA. Those are policing qualifications. But we are not only giving degrees, we are also giving diplomas, we are also giving, certificates, because at N12 level 5, you will get a national certificate. Then 6, you'll get a diploma. 7, you are starting with your degrees. So we vary, in other words now, the allocation of our bursaries according to, to that code, according to that line. But we specifically specialize our skills environment, because if you're talking about expert services in the organization, such as architects and so on, those are, skills. You talk about veterinary sciences, in the dog environment, those are skills. So we specialize them and we give them an allocation as well in terms of that. So we're talking about a variety of qualifications, management and leadership, training as well. We give, bursaries in terms of that. So it's not just one group of qualifications that we are looking at. We're looking according to the needs of the organization. And what happens in HRD, and we are currently busy now, trying to craft a policy that is also going to guide specifically. We've been working with the National Institute on bursaries. What we receive, from finance, then we get to apportion a certain amount that is going to be allocated for the bursaries. Then the provinces and the divisions, they are given criteria in terms of how, they need to look at the applications until such time that they reach to the national committee, which is at head office, where all the applications get looked at, and even in terms of the prioritization. The other thing that I'm forgetting is that many a times, or I can put it in percentage, it is 85% of the qualification that a person is doing must be linked also to the job, because it is meant to enhance and develop the skills. However, we are also mindful of certain careers where you will find that it becomes a dead end. In other words, if a person needs to study in order to grow in another direction, then he has to begin to take that in that direction. There will be nothing that is specific. Like if you take the secretaries, for instance, when they are studying, they will have to take either a diploma in human resource management or another qualification. So the national instruction on bachelor takes cognizance of all, those things. So that is, how the bachelor is, are managed in terms of that. And then when it comes to the impact for measuring, the quick claims, I think as part of management, it becomes important that you monitor absence in the organization because it has got financial implications, as well. And I think because we have got even the health risk managers, that we are working with, which on a quarterly basis generate, the report in terms of showing the profile of the organization and, in terms of the healthness of the organization, it becomes critically important that we look at the, at the sick leave because it impacts on the, on even the shifts at the stations in terms of how people are going to be deployed, so that it becomes easy for the organization to take, decisions in terms of those people who are sick to the extent that they can no longer perform, and you medically board them so that they leave the organization, they open the post, and you are able to employ people that are healthy. But what, and it also goes with, with the finances. And as part of management, in any organization, you are required to manage the absence of the people. I'm not going to say people sometimes pretend to be sick. Therefore, you have to visit, because if people are sick, it is a requirement that you visit the people in order to, to show that care, and everything. So, there is management that is, that is required in terms of that. So, the measuring, the impact becomes critically important so that we are able to understand, are we a sick organization? And at what level is this organization sick? I think one of the interesting, reports that came from Alexander Forbes was when it was showing actually that the sick part of the organization that is always affected is at warrant officer level. In terms of that. Then you begin, and even it shows you the obesity, levels in the organization, and it shows you which level, and you need to begin now to say, which is the productive line of the organization, and if we can be sick at this, at this level, what is it that we need to do as an organization, improving your EHW programs in order to improve the wellness of the program. I think from the side of the department, that is the reason why we have put this particular indicator to be part. And we see it very crucial for us, because we cannot just manage an organization which one day we are going to see it falling down. We need to to be able to have management information out of it so that we are able to plan accordingly, from the human resource point of view.
I think, Chair, maybe just to add to that one. The DPSA has flagged the need of management of sick leave. The sense is that across the departments, there is a challenge when it comes to that area. I think studying the leave patterns in the organization. So it is as a result of that that we are thinking that it is necessary to also look at those transversal requirements and to start saying how is the situation played itself out in such a general indicator, said, so that we can deal with those. And when we look at, for instance, incapacity leave in the organization, it is sitting uncomfortable. It requires to be manage at least to understand and to start saying if they like attrition rate, most organizations, commercial or whatever, they measure attrition rate and then they put a norm to say for this industry an attrition rate that is exceeding X percentage is slightly abnormal, or if it is below this area. So we're trying to come to a point where we can start baselining, tracking, and come with a norm to say strictly say. But if it achieves particular norms, it may be starting to look at whether it is normal sick leave or whether it is paid sick leave or whether the organization is making people sick. I think it's for that purpose that we're trying to check those issues.
So I see, Mr. Kuhl,
No, President Dengue, I just wanted to add two things. In your problem-orientated policing, you, when you do hotspot analysis, you find that a certain area become a hotspot due to the availability of your weapons in that particular area. Sometimes it happens that there's more members that are sick from a particular area and affect immediately on policy. The second area is on your operational readiness. If you're a TRT, NIU or task force and you are sick, it affects your operational readiness immediately in that particular and environment. So those are some of the areas that make this particular subject important. Thank you.
So, I mean, technical area, I mean, the last time I was working on this, he said that they did it, this graph, July, high, same guy, and the same is ready.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In terms of the availability of members, how do you ensure that the July, December situation change? You know, what is the change plan? So it's a difficult area, but we will support any additional steps to ensure that we address that issue.
Chair, I think there are two other questions from Honorable Muller, that is allocation of funds general as well as the issue of Judge Pien Masters.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, the spending of on devolved facilities, the 278 police stations, we can only spend on those stations, and a maintenance expenditure on that was approximately 100 million, if I'm not mistaken, was 96 million in terms of the maintenance in this regard of on the 278 police stations. These are only the maintenance part because they already exist, it's not building of new stations. Secondly, slide 252, the 20%, the deviation of capital works. We normally look at our actual expenditure because the methodology that we use in government dictates that you look at your previous performance as well. But what we did, and that is a slide that says percentage variation from approved infrastructure project budget is a 20%. But it is derived also from a practice note from the National Treasury, which says that on capital projects, you can deviate up to 20%, you can go over, in this regard or under. So we took that as a basic norm in saying that in this regard, you can go up to 20, you can deviate 20%. For instance, in other current expenditures, it's 15%. It comes from there, together also with a bit of analysis to see what previous expenditures were, but it was actually because of a procurement norm that we applied here in this regard as well. Then also, if I look at the implementing of the NDP in terms of budgeting, when I look at the paragraph, I must say that directly for this specific item, we haven't budgeted per se, although obviously if you talk about demilitarization, talk about different way of doing things, it will be included in the normal budget. Because it says the decision to demilitarize the police force moving away from its history of brutality, so you will have training funds in the normal run of the mill in order to train your people anyhow. And then also certain other aspects that you might find in this plan. So, indirectly yes, directly at this point in time, not yet per se. Then also in terms of your specialized units. Now, we had a debate at some point in time in our National Management Forum of what actually is a specialized unit. Be that as it may. We are going to do them under program 2 and 3. Those are elements that have been indicated there. But if I look at task force, 72 million. FCS unit, 849 million. Stock theft, 474 million. DRT, 294 million. You get to a figure of 1.689 billion if you regard those four as space units. So, but those elements are all very transparent in the program one, program two, as well as program three. Then also, DPCI, the intention is, obviously, to move to a program six. That is the intention. And a lot of work has gone into it. In the meantime, there was also high court rulings and legislative mandates, things that you are very much aware of and as you know a lot of. In creating a program, there was also a different depth. In creating a program, I'm not going to go into depth because the Treasury has a whole manual on that. Obviously, you have to look at the program name. You have to look at the program description and the purpose. You have to look at sub-programs and their functional demarcation and descriptions. You have to look at measurable objectives per sub-program. You have to look at performance indicators per sub-program together with an indication of the systems that can report on performance. You have to look at the very important one, at the number of personnel, because you have to provide for the funds of those personnel at that program. And you have to look then obviously at other costs, because the number of personnel and the level they are will obtain their salaries, that will again total into their costs, and at the end of the day for allocation that you will provide for such a sub-program. Now, taking into account that all of those are receiving discernible interest and attention, taking into account that the policy guidelines were approved by Parliament. So it has to be taken into account when you design machines. And it was approved 22 October on 2030. So you have to take these policy guidelines into account. You also have to take into account a protocol document signed at some point in time by the current head of General Detectives and the previous head of the DPCI. So you have a number of variables now that you also have to discount in designing the program. But what we at least believe is that the program is so visible, it's easy, or not easy, it is easier to monitor because it is out there and you can see it. So, but obviously that we have also had interaction with Treasury and so forth. And but there were challenges in order to, you see, we cannot merely take the amount and put it out there if there's a specific decision has not been taken of who's doing what. Because if you don't have who's doing what, and you just put the amount there, it means you haven't really affected or given attention to your protocol policy. So it is this functional approach that's underway, and we've had a lot of interaction in order to establish this program. We trust. And as I said, then we have the High Court ruling as well. And what does it mean? So we trust that we will at least in the near future have that on the table. Because if you say I only have to do A, you have to write the purpose for A, you have to write the performance indicator, you have to look at the personnel, and you have to give costs. If you say I'm doing A minus 1, it differs again. And it is indeed a challenge at this point in time in order to convert it into specific program aspects as I've read to you in the migration document that you would find as prescribed by the Treasury. But we've had discussions, ASCOM has written letters to them, we've indicated into our MTF that this is a very important aspect, and I don't know whether they're still doing it, they used to do it. Before they merely created the program, obviously this is by law, they will also bring it to the Joint Standing Committee on Finance, if I remember, and say they want to change certain program structures like this. Now, I don't know whether they are still doing it, but so there's a formal approval process in Treasury as such. I hope it addresses your questions of the status at this point.
Maybe follow up on that issue, I just wonder in terms of internal process, of course, that's my concern. Remember we had that final station last year, and they cut down a hotel on the off floor, which is in the venue.
between the thing, head of the GDCI and head of the sector, there was that discussion about the arrangements. They were about that 90% decided in Bharat will go away. Now we've got a new activity of GDCI. I just want to know the internal process. Are you back to square one? Are we making, I just want to get that, you know,
Thank you, Ms. Manuel. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just a follow-up on the explanation. If we were to go by that explanation, then you're never going to reach a stage where that act is implemented. We passed the law. The president signed it into law. He says this is what must happen. Now, who in Treasury? Is it the minister or the official in Treasury who are telling this can't be done? The police management are the authority in planning what must now be done in implementing the act as been passed and signed. Now the question that you were raising in terms of the protocol suggests that you yourself have not finalized this thing in your head. Because if you depend on Treasury for those kind of steps, including defining what you need to define. Remember, this is a unit that has been functioning, that has been incorporated, with all the functions that has been in it. So what is the difficulty in arriving at where you say it is now a program that we are putting it there to run? Treasury won't have the veto power to change the legislation with respect. I don't think they care. So what I am having the difficulties with understanding, Chairman, is that yourself, maybe you have to explain this so that before I make the conclusion, which probably may be wrong. But I'm going by your explanation, and I'm looking at what has been done already. What have you prepared this to be? Because it didn't come up in terms of your presentation. We probed it into discussion. So I just want to understand. Maybe let me pause to allow the commissioner or the general to respond, and then I'll come back. Then I was listening, and I know that the commissioner mentioned that the partnership with the SNDF in terms of the personnel that has come over to the police. I'm just wondering whether in terms of your factoring, in terms of training and stuff that you're going to do, they are already taking into account in terms of additional bodies that are coming from defense who had a different pre-training, not necessarily of the police training, whether you already work in terms of the expenditure as part of the newcomers into the police.
We had a short team and